that I was going to go get our station wagon out of the and bring a rope and go tie it to the tractor and then jerk the tractor out of where it was stuck, and then I'd finish plowing, everything would be great. So, I get the car out and I go and hook it up to the tractor, and all of a sudden I see my dad's orange Jeep coming down the road. And I hadn't got the tractor unstuck yet, and there I am with the station wagon, which I'm not supposed to know how to drive or have out of the garage. So I quick backed up and I go around back to the garage, and I pull into the garage so full of adrenaline.
Oh no.
That I literally drove through the back of the garage and knocked the garage off the foundation. At this point, I'm in full panic. I ran and hid in my room in the closet. And this was miraculously one of the times when my dad decided not to exercise. He had two emotions when I was growing, or two sort of modes when I was growing up, absence and anger. And this was one of those moments where he didn't do that. I think because it was like so devastatingly ridiculous. So if this was a Friday and I had a season pass to go skiing because I loved skiing, and we had a municipal ski hill, and he came up and he said, "So, what happened?" And I told him what happened, and he said, "We'll talk." Just had a normal dinner. I was like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And he got out his jack that jacks up the car when you have to fix the tire, and jacked the garage up and pulled it, like hooked up a rope to it and pulled it back on the foundation. And he said, "It's okay." And I went skiing the next day. So how's that? It's like an example, and there aren't a whole bunch, but it's an example of where my dad was like somehow merciful in the way I imagine God being. I was thinking about that story because I was thinking about this text from Genesis and how it's usually been interpreted, at least since St. Augustine in the West, which was focusing on Adam and Eve eating the fruit from the tree, like the deed. They did the bad deed. And so that interpretation of sin places the like unforgivability on the deed. And the actual fact is that before St. Augustine, the early desert monastics who in the first and second and third century went out into Egypt to sort of grapple with their demons. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. They had a different take on the story. They thought that God could have handled the deed. Like, what was problematic is they couldn't handle that they had done something wrong, and so they hid. Mm. And so the desert monastics made this big issue about hiding versus transparency. And they focused not just on the deed, but like what causes us to hide. What are the roots of deception for us? And so I've been reflecting on that, like what causes us to hide. And obviously there's like the evolutionary piece about hiding, like a chameleon in order to survive will change its colors. Or like a little child will hide because they're afraid they're gonna, you know, get in huge big trouble. So that makes sense. And then there's the kind of hiding that's a little more sophisticated, that's kind of the adult, I'm gonna like beef up my resume a little more than it should be beefed up because I want to get, or tofu'd up or whatever, because I want to get a job.
Thank you.
And so I just sort of gloss myself, you know? That's another kind of hiding. I'm hiding my authentic self in order to present who I think will be more palatable or more likable. We probably do that in lots of contexts, not just with resumes. And then there's a third kind of hiding, which is, I think, more directly damaging. And it's when we say gossip or even spread explicit lies or take advantage of another person for our own use. We're in a sense lying to them or about them for our own pleasure or our own advantage. Like, I think gossip is a fairly regular example of that, but say sexual exploitation, sex trafficking is a way to lie relationally with the person. You're not even interested in who the person is. It's a use of the other person for your own laugh or your own pleasure or whatever. It's a way of hiding, hiding from the authentic reality of what's happening. And so these desert monastics had this practice they called radical honesty. Not about deeds, but about what they called the shadow thoughts that begin to make you think, oh, I could hide and it would be easier. Or I could hide and it would be pleasurable. Or I could hide and it wouldn't be as hard. I could be deceptive. Adam and Eve hide instead of telling God directly what they had done and owning it and seeing, you know, can we deal with this? You know, let's work it out. Mm-hmm. So that practice included meditation, in which you just let the thoughts that are in your mind come to you and notice them. And when there are what they called shadow thoughts or demons that might be encouraging you to hide in one way or another, you went to what they called an Abba or an Ima, an older monastic who you would tell this to, and they would hold it with you, be an accountability partner, if you will, in what you're feeling inside, so that it doesn't turn into the kind of action which then leads you away from who you would like to be for yourself and in relationship to others and ultimately in relationship to God. And so, as a part of our practice entering into Lent with the acknowledgement of our humanity, an acknowledgement of the ways in which we grapple with how to be in our lives, and the temptation really to hide in very many different ways in different contexts, I want to invite you, instead of our usual practice of offering reflections out loud after the sermon, to just spend a few minutes with the gray piece of paper that was in your chair, with your thoughts. Like, ask questions like, where in your life do you need to develop a practice of not hiding? Or where do you need to develop a practice of radical honesty? Or who might your Abba or Ima be to whom you can go and acknowledge what you're thinking about and have an accountability partner? Or something else, whatever else it is that's provoked by this reflection on the text from Genesis about Adam and Eve. So I'd like to invite you to take a few minutes to do that. And then when you're ready, come up and tie that onto this branch that you see up here. And throughout the season of Lent, we'll be doing that with branches and then putting the branches up here and, in a sense, creating a canopy of our reflections, of our journey through the season of Lent. I would invite you to tie them directly onto one up here, but it might fall on you. So tie it onto this one, and then we'll place it up there gingerly later. So take a few minutes now and reflect and write something, and then when you're ready, just come up or hand it to someone if it's hard for you to come up to tie it onto this branch.